So let's dive in with our introductions. So starting with myself, my background with the conflict res my I am with the Conflict Resolution Center of Santa Cruz County, including as a mediator and a trainer in conflict resolution and communication work. One thing, as a representative of the CRC and as the facilitator in this event here, is one thing that I do not have is an opinion on the or a perspective to share on the content. My role is simply to facilitate as best as I can productive communication between everybody else here. And so I would like to turn the introduction part over to Lanny. Is it Lanny or Lonnie? Lonnie. Lonnie.
Hello, hello. Yes, and just to give us some guidelines, what would you like us to initially just introduce name and organization or?
Name it. Well, I have a little guide for a introduction here, something along these lines.
I'll just, I'll just introduce myself. My name's Lonnie Faulkner. I'm with I founded an organization called Equity Transit. Really, we know that Harvard research shows that the number one way out of poverty is giving people access to opportunity, which is through transportation. And transportation is critically involved with housing and jobs. And so I became involved when I really realized that we undermine a large percentage of our population by not providing access to good, robust public transportation. So I'm a transportation advocate, amongst other things. My background's in biotechnology, biochemistry, and so I have a science background. I work on the Central Fire Board. I'm with LAFCO, and I do a number of other things, including executive committee of Sierra Club, and on and on and on. So just want to pass the mic along.
All right, thank you, Lanny. I mean, I'm sorry, Lonnie. And so next on the list here is Elaine.
Good evening, everyone. Elaine Johnson. I'm the executive director of Housing Santa Cruz County. I'm also the local president of the NAACP. I'm a trained mediator, and I'm a graduate of Monterey College of Law.
Thank you. And next up, Rob.
I'm Rob Means. I'm working with LoopWorks to create a podcast system in Milpitas, California, where we're trying to connect to the BART transit hub there, because it's sliced and diced by a lot of different roads and creeks and railroad tracks, and just trying to get through all of that to the BART center is kind of challenging. Also a political activist for a number of years, programmer in my first career, and did sales, service, and marketing of electric bikes in my second career. This seems to be my third career, so thank you all for being here.
Alrighty, thank you. And next up, Hannah.
Hello, my name's Hannah Fairbairn.
Say, Hannah, would you get the mic closer to your mouth there?
Just bring it a little closer.
Closer, oh, okay. Is this good? Is that working? Okay, my name's Hannah Fairbairn, and I'm here representing the Vista Center, which is the Center for the Blind in Santa Cruz. And by extension, I'm to some extent representing disability as a whole, serious disability. I myself taught for many, many years at the Carroll Center in Boston, teaching people who were new to blindness. And then a few years ago now, I wrote an award-winning book called When You Can't Believe Your Eyes, Vision Loss and Personal Recovery. And it's intended especially for people losing sight and also for partners and families. And I teach in various places, mostly low-tech stuff about how to get your needs met when you're living with disability. And obviously, how to get about when you're blind is a very serious issue indeed, so.
What do you think, Johanna? Next, Matt.
Good evening. I'm Matt Farrell, and I'm here today representing Santa Cruz County Friends of the Rail and Trail. The Rail and Trail organization has been working since 2002 to advocate for both rail and trail in the Branch Line corridor. And I appreciate the opportunity to be here and participate in this panel. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Matt, and thank you to all of the panelists here. So I want to emphasize that panelists speak as knowledgeable members of the community, but not as official representatives of their organizations. With this in mind, we hope the panelists will feel free in talking about how they see things. So here in Santa Cruz County, daily and seasonal congestion stalls economic growth and community vitality, but new transportation technologies are appearing. So we can make this conversation about weaving the new technologies into the current transportation tapestry and whether the promised value of adding robo-taxis or pod cars is worth the expected costs. So the process tonight here is to use something like an open fishbowl format that allows attendees, it's sort of a half fishbowl because of our stage format here. But this allows the attendees to participate in the conversation by coming onto the stage or as close to the stage as you're comfortable or able to get to. There is a chair with a microphone on it, and so attendees can take the empty seat. Once you've shared your question, or and it's in that, it's from that chair or as close to the chair as you're comfortable getting, you can share a question, a clarification, addition, a different perspective, whatever it is that you'd like. There will be a little bit of a discussion about that topic, but at that point, please return to your seat so that somebody else from the audience can then come up and take that seat. Does that make sense to everybody? The gist of how we envision this to work. Let's see if reality matches the vision. And so a couple of guidelines or ground rules to keep us on track. Step up, and I think there is a slide for the ground rules. Do we have that? There we go. We have some impressive tech, so I'm enjoying that. But step up, step back. That means shy people, encouraged to talk, talkative folks, share your part, but also make space for the shy ones. Try this process and consider the perspectives and opinions, and try to hold back judgment until a little later. Please don't interrupt and raise hands. We're generally not sort of calling on raised hands in the audience today. Turn off your fax machines, your pagers, your landlines, and I think you understand the gist of that one. Please leave egos at the door. And let's focus on community and the future, and try to lead by example. So, any questions about that? Okay.
I have a question.
Yes.
If we just have a short question after people speak or whatever, do we have to get up there, or can we?
Yes. The idea is that anybody who would like to contribute something, just join the panel and contribute it that way. Thank you. It may seem a little bit unusual to how these things are often done, but so there's a little bit of an experimentalness in that regard, I think. But let's see how it goes. So we have a lot of points to cover. The general idea is that between now and about 7:40, I will share some background information that has been provided by the PRT folks. So that's about a half hour of sharing some information. My hunch is that we'll go through this information a little more quickly, and that's when we can open up the space for audience members to come up on stage and share their questions, perspectives, and so on. Let's see, and so that leaves us maybe something like 45 minutes or so to discuss. So diving in to the background information. So here in Santa Cruz County, daily and seasonal congestion shows the imbalance between demand for road space on one hand and limited supply on the other. compounding the issue is the mismatch between sprawl and mass transit's corridor services. Mass transit, for 150 years, has relied upon large and expensive engines to move lots of stuff and people all at once. This works well for transportation when towns grew up. Where did the towns grow up? Along rail lines. As Santa Cruz County has learned, corridors like Highway 1 or the coastal rail do not well serve cities that sprawl. So for the past 100 years, the automobile and racism have shaped our cities by changing the pattern of development. We now live and work in space in places that sprawl across land and up into the mountains. While corridor transit, such as light rail, may not mesh well with sprawl, network transit, like our bus system, does work a little better. Unfortunately, daily and seasonal congestion stalls buses along with all the rest of the cars. So that's a 30,000 foot, that's the helicopter description of where we are and how we got here. Would any of the panelists like to share some brief comments to add a little bit more context to that?
Sure, I'll just share what came to mind as you were talking about that, is that here in the United States, we once had the most robust public transit system in the world. And it really served to get people to work and school. And it was in the 50s that the process of sprawl and white flight and building of ever-widening highways actually cut through the backyards and bedrooms of brown and black communities. And it cut off people from opportunity, it cut off people from connection and jobs and education. And I think the comment about the large engines that struck my thought process is that places like Los Angeles, for example, and other places in the country had some of the most integrated and cleanest public transit systems in the world. And I just wanted to leave that for folks.
Thank you. Anybody else want to share a quick comment? Okay, I will move on. So there is another slide called Ascents. Actually, there was a slide before that called Corridors, Sprawl, and Networks. But let's go to the Common Ascents slide. There we go. So we want to see if our panelists, to what degree the panelists agree on some broad points. And here are four points. So number one, our climate crisis is worsening quickly. Number two, shifting 10% of trips to public transport could substantially reduce CO2 emissions. Number three, Santa Cruzans want more and better public transit. And number four, RTC and metro operations are currently funded with revenue from these sources at approximately these percentages. Those percentages and sources are 40% local sales taxes, especially from Measure D, 10 to 12% passenger fares, including the UCSC and Cabrillo College student fees, 20% State Transportation Agency and Transportation Development Act, 12% Transit and Intercity Rail Capital Program, 14% Federal Transit Administration, and 2% or maybe a little bit more other miscellaneous. So those are the four ideas. How do panelists feel, broadly speaking, about those four ideas? Is there basic alignment on those or anything?
The only thing that I would note is I think those numbers are from the metro numbers, their revenue and expenses, their revenue income. I'm not sure what the numbers are for RTC, so I just want to make that distinction.
Okay, thank you. So that said, on those four points that you can read if you turn your necks 180 degrees and it sounds like there may be broad agreement about those things. And If there is, are there any other significant points that you think should be added to that list? And going back, one, climate crisis is worsening. Two, shifting 10% of travel to public transit would be a great thing for CO2 emissions. Santa Cruzans want more and better public transit. And then it was a breakdown of RTC and metro operations funding. Anything else that should be added there besides those motorcycles?
I think that one important aspect of talking about transit and overall transportation that I don't really see in this list of four topics is the issue of equity and access. You know, somewhere around 30% of the population in Santa Cruz County doesn't own an automobile. And people who are blind or in wheelchairs are challenged by the current mobility services we have in the county. And so I think when we look to this question, equity and access should be an important value in how we plan for the future.
I agree with that. This is Hannah Fairbairn talking about disability here. I do agree with all those four points, but the one that is missing from the point of view of disability is from the descriptions that I was told about this, there would be a significant number of steps to climb for access. And I think that that rules out a whole lot of disability.
So speaking as the PRT expert, shall we say, most all of the designs that I'm aware of either bring the PRT cabs down from elevated guideways to ground level, or their pod car stops not only have essentially two flights of stairs to get up to 16 feet up in the air, they also have individual elevators at each one of these pod car stops.
Okay, thank you. So it sounds like a very important fifth point was added, which is about equity and accessibility. And then a little bit of discussion about the accessibility point. How do people who might have some disability or some other factor, how do we make sure that they can access these things, let's call them things for the moment, yeah. But which about which I will explain more what they are in the coming minutes.
And I'd like to add another point, and I don't know if this fits in as a sixth, but safety, I think, is really critical across all of these formats. I know that I serve on the Community Traffic Safety Coalition, and being a cyclist, I just biked from downtown Aptos mm-hmm. to here. Safety's a big issue with pods or buses or trains, making sure everyone on board is safe.
Okay, thank you. So that's a couple of important points. Would it be okay to pause our discussion here, deliver a little bit of more background information, and I see a couple people who sound like they would like to contribute, but would it be okay to hold that for about another 15 minutes? And then we can open everything up.
Okay. Before you go on, Stacy, it was muddled in my mind the difference between safety and security. Safety is that nothing accidental happens to you that is designed in a safe way. And we know from the 50 years of experience in West Virginia, Morgantown University there, that this technology is very safe in terms of not hurting people. There's also security, which is protecting people from ill people. And this technology tends to be better at that than most other transit technologies, because when you go to the pod car stop, you can immediately get on the pod car and leave, and you're not leaving with others. You're leaving by yourself. So just safety and security are pretty well covered with this kind of a technology.
Okay, we can add those to accessibility and equity. Okay, so to explain a little bit more about this question of mobility options, there is a mobility options slide. Okay, so progress has been made with private microtransit, so bikes, e-bikes, scooters. Now, two technologies promise widespread community benefits: automated vehicles, robo-taxis, and personal rapid transit, PRT, or pod cars. So here's a starting list of options. So there's microtransit, your 2 feet, your bikes, your scooters, B-cycle. Not sure what that is, but maybe we'll come.
That's a shared bicycle arrangement. In fact, okay. I think there's a bank of them not far, right in front of City Hall.
Yeah. I was just in New York City, and they're all over the place there.
Yeah, different names.
Yeah. So then there's our personal automobiles, shared cars, taxis, Ubers, Lyfts, that kind of thing, buses and rapid transit, light rail transit, commuter rail, subway, BART. Autonomous driverless vehicles, those Waymos, for example. And then personal rapid transit like pod cars, and last and maybe least, air taxis. So one day. but probably not today, at least not for the most of us. So options, but what is realistic in terms of options moving forward? So there should be a slide for that. What transit do we want? So for various reasons, we don't encourage the personal automobile. We already have too many of those for the road space available. And for various reasons, we don't want to encourage, light rail transit requires right-of-way that is likely to be at the expense of road space, which is an already scarce resource. So recent experience in Santa Clara County shows ridership per dollar invested to be a low return on investment. Commuter rail and subways also have return on investment issues. While air taxis may serve a niche market and sound super fun and exciting, they're not going to transport lots of people per hour. To reduce, except for maybe places like Beverly Hills or
Manhattan.
Very special places. But so if we take those options from our list and leave the relatively more affordable and effective options, let's see as are in this slide. So there's microtransit, shared cars, buses, and rapid transit. Driverless vehicles like a Waymo and Zooks. I haven't seen the Zooks around, but I'm sure somewhere there is something called a Zooks, and it's got no driver. Last of all, personal rapid transit. So please note that autonomous or driverless vehicles are most appropriate in uncongested areas because they do add more traffic. There are two reasons. First, they're moving people who may not have been on the roads at all, which the technical term for which is latent demand, or the people who want the convenience of driving but for some reason can't. So the second reason is that after the robo-taxi drops off the rider, it adds to traffic as it's looking for a place to park or going to find another rider. PRT, on the other hand, makes sense in congested areas because it does not increase traffic. The real question about PRT is whether the promised value of adding pod cars is worth the expense. While some folks here may not be familiar with pod cars, hopefully the panelists are. And before outlining PRT technology, let's see if you agree on removing those four options from tonight's discussion of future transportation options. So we're removing cars, light rail, commuter rail, and air taxis from the discussion of future transportation options in this area.
Yeah, I feel that I would definitely include light rail, passenger rail, various forms of rail, and when I think about costs, I think about not just costs, but efficiencies. And I think of efficiencies on many levels. So I think of energy efficiencies, space efficiencies, money efficiency, moving people. So for example, in a pod car, you might get 4 to 8 people. In a bus, you might get 50 or more. In a train car, you might get 350 people. And what that does with moving people is that you can move more people in a given amount of space on a train versus a bus versus a car. I think of time and health, and something that we hadn't mentioned in that 4 or 5 earlier points is that tires and things that make up a lot of these little cars are incredibly toxic. Tires are incredibly toxic. And every time we drive a car, and I've noticed that the pod cars have rubber tires, is that these tires are disintegrating, and as a biochemical endocrinologist, putting toxic chemicals into our system, air, water, and soils. So there's the health issues. There's also the health aspect of getting people to walk. Typically, if people can walk about 15 minutes, so it's about a mile, maybe half a mile to a mile, that's an acceptable amount of time to spend walking. And it's one of the reasons why, as a country, we tend to be less healthy, because we don't have that integration of walking into public transit. There's also another point, which is community efficiencies, which is when you are on a train, less so on a bus, but I support buses, is that you actually get to know your community members really well. And I've lived in Switzerland, I've actually gone on the SMART train, and I've taken Amtrak across the country, and you really get to meet and know the people on those buses, whether you're commuting day to day or long distance. And then, of course, environmental efficiencies. So I won't go into details, but those are some of the things that I like to think of sum total.
Thank you, Lonnie. Efficiency, community, environment. I think there was one more in there.
Money. Oh, and I wanted to mention money. Is that when we talk about trains, is that these are systems that are built to last 50 to 100 years, whereas vehicles last much less. Buses last maybe, I think, 12 years is optimal, but they make them go longer when you have to, so maybe 30 years. And pod cars, again, you're talking about natural resources, so that's an efficiency of resources and money.
Okay, let's dig into this a little bit more. So most people are somewhat familiar with the technologies that were up on the slide there. Even the newer stuff like microtransit or robotaxis. Less familiar is the personal rapid transit option, or pod cars, or PRT. So let's look at what that is. Now there is a hardware slide, I think, following this. There we go. So hardware for a PRT system includes guideways, cabs, offline stops. Offline stops are a critical part of what enables pod cars to travel nonstop from origin to destination. As an example, these images show how the LoopWorks design there are many different PRT designs. This is one of them. Next slide, please. Okay, guideway designs. So PRT designs vary greatly in the amount of stuff, primarily steel and concrete, needed to build them. Designs from Swift Cities and Zipar use minimal infrastructure because the primary guideway is a steel cable. LoopWorks and Mototram, on the other hand, use steel trusses for their guideways. Designs from UITRA and Glideways use road-like guideways. So wide-ranging designs also have wide-ranging price tags, at least an order of magnitude or tenfold increase between the lowest and the highest. So think your nice Cadillac versus your Lamborghini. So while we're discussing financial costs, please be aware of two different types of financial costs. So capital expenditure is what it costs to build something. Operations and maintenance is what it costs to operate the system day after day. While traditional mass transit requires 3 to 5% annually of capital expenditure to maintain operations, PRT systems only cost 1-3% of capital expenditure due to reduced costs for operations and fuel. So next slide, please. Okay, PRT benefits, perfect. So each transportation option comes with costs and benefits. Here are benefits demonstrated by existing pod car systems. Quicker and safer than driving, energy efficient, dependable trip time, transit time options like reading, working, or meditating, low cost O&M. So investors often refer to return on investment, ROI. Most look only at the financial aspects. As a community, we are better served by using a three-factor ROI that includes people, planet, and profit. PRT advocates argue that pod cars check all three boxes by providing better service for people, efficient and clean transit to lighten our footprint on nature, and low O&M that leads to better financial results. So with that background, let's begin the discussion 3 minutes ahead of schedule. So, at this point, we are able to open it up. You have a quick overview of what the pod car system is, and we've mentioned that there are other systems out there that can co-mingle with the pod car or be selected or considered as an option in addition to the pod car. But starting off, is there anyone in the audience who would like to contribute something at this point? Question, clarification, request for more information, and who would like to join us up on stage? And if there are multiple folks who are all chomping at the bit to get up here, you can kind of move up here to the front.
And, okay.
Wait for, and if you could just introduce yourself and then...
I'm Bill Martin, and I was expecting much more explanation of what they are. I don't really understand what they are with the I was thinking that would be the central theme of this whole event.
Okay.
Like you were sort of implying that it might go to door to door. I don't even know how you pick them up. I mean, like, I don't really know anything about them.
Great question. This, I believe, would be a question for Rob. Would that be the case?
That sounds right.
Okay.
So, access...
Sorry for the interruption. Would it be a good idea to... move back to the PRT designs use slide. That way we can illustrate a little bit. Two more back, I think. There we go, this slide.
Yes, that'll help, actually. You can see in that topmost image that there's this small white cab on a relatively white guideway, and it's merging. So most all of the... PRT systems anticipate that they are going to be elevated. There's systems like Glideways and Ultra, which is in at Heathrow Airport, where they try to keep it down on the ground. But as anybody trying to find routes around any particular metropolitan area, there's not a lot of on-the-ground corridors that are available. So I generally think of PRT as being elevated. How you access it is through a pod car stop.
Okay, can I pause and just maybe add a, I don't know if this is, well, let's see if this is a helpful clarification, but anybody who's been through an airport in a large airport recently, the airports all seem to have these air trains, and you've got to kind of go out, and then you take the elevator up, or you escalator, whatever, and the train takes you from like terminal to terminal. But in this case, it would be this little pod car.
Right.
Something like that. But then it's going through the community. Is that?
Correct.
Elevated.
Correct.
Okay.
And the vehicles that you're talking about, the automated people movers, can move 20 to 50 people. They're pretty large devices and are designed to move a lot of people in a short period of time. This technology is using small cabs so that the stops, the places where people can get on and off, are relatively small, like a bus stop is, and they're scattered around about as frequently as a bus stop is, which means roughly 8 pod car stops per square mile, And that gets us back to something that Lonnie brought up, is that having people walk from their homes to their local podcar stop, which is probably going to be within a quarter to a third of a mile at the most, if you've got 8 podcar stops per square mile, that puts back into the equation, the public health equation, of people being walking on a daily basis a few blocks, which is just definitely good for their health and well-being. Once you get to that podcar stop, it's either an elevator to get you up to the 16 feet up in the air to where the cabs are, or again, a little exercise, climbing 2 flights of stairs. Usually when I get to the top of 2 flights of stairs, I'm breathing a little heavier than when I started. The vehicles will be waiting for you right then, right there at the podcar stop. If they're not, they'll be there very, very shortly, or on demand. But generally, there's 1 or 2 of them sitting at each podcar stop waiting for you to get in. It's kind of like a horizontal elevator. You get in, tell it where you want it to go, the door closes, and off it goes on its own.
Okay.
And it goes from where you started to where you want to be nonstop.
So you can ask it to go over there or over there.
Correct. Because we're talking a network. We're not talking a corridor. So we've got, it's kind of like visualizing a bus network where it's got buses going this way and going that way and round yonder and whatnot. You get to do the same, but you don't have to ever transfer. That's the killer with a bus network, is the transfers. Because whenever somebody's not moving, time flows very slowly, like about 3 times as slow as it would if you're actually moving. Mm-hmm. So we get past that part, you get to your destination, you're down the elevator or down the 2 flights of stairs to the neighborhood, if not the across the street from wherever you wanted to go to. Does that clarify?
Let's see, do any of folks? The panelists have additional question or clarification?
Well, I'm a native New Yorker. I was born and raised in New York, so I haven't even been driving that long because we don't drive in New York, right? Public transportation was a thing, and but a lot of what you talked about, Lonnie, I mean, we walk to the subway, we walk to the bus to get the bus, you know, we walk to get to the cab, because that's just what you did. I'm honestly, I've spent all week trying to picture this, whatever, this thing you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And it reminds me of the Jetsons, right? It's like, how do, I can't quite grasp it, to be honest with you. And for me, you know, riding public transportation was a way to connect with people, right? It wasn't just that you were going from your house to work. There was that in between where you had the opportunity to speak to other people, you know, especially having the diversity and stuff like that, which I think is critically important personally. But you know, I'm still trying to understand this new model of getting us from point A to point B and how that is gonna help us minimize, or I'm still not clear on that myself. You got Selma on it, my friend.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Thank you, Elaine. And I think, Hannah, you had your hand up next.
I would like.
And if you can use the mic.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
Perfect.
Okay. So speaking first of sight loss and then going on to general disability, most people who lose their sight do it at the age of 75 or older, so that their fitness and muscle power is not what it was. And therefore, and I'm sure this applies to a lot of people with other kinds of physical disability. And therefore, the big thing for people in my position is to use Paracruz, which is attached to the Metro bus system and is fairly small vans with a person, a driver, who comes to your door, escorts you down the steps and into the little van, and then will escort you up the elevator to your whatever your appointment at the hospital. And this need for a personal attendant to get you places would not be true of a young blind person who might have had good training, but young blind people cannot possibly afford to live in Santa Cruz. So that we are really looking at how would a small system like this, an individual sort of system, help with this need for a personal person to help you get from place to place. And the other thing I want to mention is that if I get on a bus, which I do, I do use the people sitting near me and the conductor to make sure I get off at the right stop and to say, oh no, you want to cross back there, and then the place you want is the second on the left. So I'm very much into having more people, not fewer.
All right, thank you, Anna. And Matt, and then after Matt, I see, sir, you've been there waiting patiently, and so you'll be up next. And you're welcome to come up now if you would like, or you can wait.
So I was just gonna say that my wife, Connie, worked at the university for 33 years, and she rode the bus from basically downtown up to the university during that time. And so her commute pattern was pretty predictable. And one of the things she talked about was her bus family, because there would be the same people who would get on the bus every morning, and they started to develop a community that you don't really find in a lot of the transportation commute modes people use now. And I think that historically, like when we had streetcar systems, there was a lot of community built from all those travel patterns where people were meeting each other on the streetcar, going to from their employees, their employment, to other community activities, church, all those things. And I think that it's an unappreciated benefit of a transit network that accommodates groups of people. And I think it really helps build a community by having that kind of connection in transportation.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Matt. Sorry, one second. But there is an important sort of a logistical flow here. I think in order for your voice to be, for anybody's voice to be heard, it may be important to actually be in the chair. And then, so while he's moving to the chair, please go ahead, Lonnie.
Oh, thank you. So you mentioned ROI several times, and it concerns me because public service, public libraries, public transit, I don't think in terms of ROI. I think in terms of how do we best serve the community, again, with efficiencies, money efficiencies. When you said that at every stop, someone is going to be able to either walk, climb those stairs, my initial thought, because I have friends who are wheelchair users and some who are blind, is how are they, are we going to pay for an elevator at every single stop? That's a lot of cost to have an elevator at every stop. And again, back to ROI, but costing with elevators. And just one more thought, I want everyone to keep this in mind. Steel on steel is the most energy efficient way to move masses of people. Steel on steel, that's rail, is the most energy efficient way to move masses of people.
Thank you, Lonnie. And sir?
Hi, I'd like to contribute a little bit of positive thinking. So
keep the mic up towards
your mouth. Okay. My name is Kevin, and I'm a PRT developer. I've worked on developing systems for 40 years. This is a great system. I've written a book called Guideway to the Future. You can get where I've been concentrating is on mass transit, going from 65 to 250 miles in your own personal car, going on I-5. But what I wanted to contribute for this PRT for Santa Cruz I think the cost could fit if the public does not pay a dime into it, but private developer get a 50-year right away and turn it over to the city or the county or the state or the federal government. But the private operator would be able to charge 25 cents a mile, and there'd be no taxes attached to that. So it's cheaper than people being in their cars. But there is a problem with this PRT system. It's the same problem with the existing bus system, is the last 5 miles. You know, people in inclement weather don't, you know, or disabled people, just getting to, and you have to be on a schedule. but that's okay, because I think the cost economics of a private developer were to get that right away 50 years under the an agreement, they could pay it with their own costs and financing it and benefit for the operating cost, and the public wouldn't have to put a dime into it. And this existing bus system, which is very good in Santa Cruz County, just costs a lot to maintain. And I have observed over the years, I've been in Santa Cruz County for 50 years, and there might be 10 people in a 50 bus that can hold 50 people. And so, you know, it helps for some people, but most people don't want to get out of their cars. They want to be on a schedule. And I know you're from New York City and stuff, communicating with other people or having more people, that's an argument that I'm not against it. It's just that a personal transportation, the benefit for is that you listen to your own music, you have the security. In both systems, you have safeties, so don't worry about that. It's just the, you have your own little capsule with your people, that, you know, a couple people or whatever, but you don't have more people, or you don't have interruption from other people with their loud music or whatever, and you don't have a disease as communicable, you know, that's to be considered, okay, in these systems. But the main event here is the cost. You know, you replace the existing bus system with a private enterprise that does this network system that they're talking about. It will have its advantages to the public, and the public doesn't have to pay for maintaining it. It's the private, and the private guy has basically 25 cents a mile plus the cost of living as it goes through, you know, year 30 or 35, and they have to maintain it, and they will if they're making a profit with 25, as long as the county or the city doesn't attach like they do with gas, you know, another 10 cents or whatever, you know, then, you know, you get where the equilibrium is. I use the analysis of our income tax, where you get 65 cents a mile credit for when you drive your personal automobile. Well, why be in your personal automobile when you can use the guideway and, you know, for 25 cents? Of course, I'm getting beyond your system, which is a great system for Santa Cruz County. My system doesn't fit, because slowing down from 250 miles an hour to 65, it takes 10 miles to get off the off ramp. Okay, but it's a different system altogether. But it's a great system. But what I'm saying is that I've solved the last 5 mile problem, and it's electric cars, so the emissions are gone. Also, it can it can charge the car while you're on the guideway, so you end up with a full charge. So, and there's a tremendous other advantage, but I'm not talking about my son. Today I wanted to contribute and focus that if private industry were to propose this and get the right of way, let them create that system. Mm-hmm. And the bus system can continue until it gets eclipsed. But the whole attitude is the public, what do they want for their convenience? How do you get I call it a failure. The bus system is great network, but you can't get people to use it. Uh-huh. And you know, of course, you know, unless it became totally prohibitive to use automobiles, which it hasn't. Gas is up at $5.50, or, you know, mm-hmm. you're still not getting them out of their cars.
So it sounds like there is a, it sounds, you know, one of the things that you're pointing at is that there are some pathways to explore, including public-private partnership, private development, and so on, in order to make this thing a little bit more feasible. I wanted to come back to the point that Hannah had made, and a couple of others had made, about the utility or the value of bus system and so on, and that these things may not necessarily need to compete, but rather could complement. And with that, please.
Hi, my name is Stephanie Ault.
Stephanie, before you carry on, I think the main point that may not have been clear from the previous speaker was that the capital expense cost to build the system and the O&M cost to maintain and operate the system is apparently low enough that private investors would be interested in doing this kind of a system, meaning that it could actually make money rather than what, you know, most transit systems are money losers. So, Stephanie, please.
I have several comments. My name is Stephanie Ault.
Eat the mic.
Sorry. My name is Stephanie Ault. I'm on EdTAC, which is the Elderly and Disabled Advisory Group to RTC. And I wanted to say first, I think one of the part of the confusion, I appreciated when the gentleman came up and said that we don't really understand what we're talking about in terms of the pod system. And I think that's critical for us to discuss any type of pod system. The design is critical. Yes. For us to make any kind of decision as to what's going to work in Santa Cruz. Part of that is, you know, you were giving the example that you would be by yourself, et cetera. So I liked how you brought up the issue of security. However, when we were looking really at rail, the RTC meeting in December, our supervisor for District 1 said, oh, well, there are other ways of having transportation other than rail. And so I went to talk to him in January and said, okay, what other, you know, transportation options are you talking about? And he mentioned glideways. So Swift Cities and Glideways have already come to our city government and said, hey, we would like to come here from, you know, the other side of the hill. So they're seriously looking at, say, glideways. So when I did a deep dive on glideways, as you mentioned before, they're on the street. So you're not really helping congestion much. Additionally, pollution issues are still an issue with glideways. But the main thing that I saw with glideways was, hey, nobody's talking, there was nothing about security. So when you're talking about door-to-door service, which is what glideways proposes, there's, to me, the first thing that came to mind was, whoa, somebody's gonna come, because with glideways, it's a pod that is gonna go somewhere. You're not necessarily by yourself in the pod. And so it can bring somebody to your home, right? So somebody's gonna see where you live. You don't know if this is a psychopath or not. And then you're gonna get into a square pod that's gonna be moving that with a stranger you don't know. I'm thinking rape. And we know that rape has been an issue for Uber, but I'm not seeing any security issues addressed when Glideways does its presentation. So that was the first thing that I thought of.
Could I respond to that part? So Glideways is probably not talking about security issues because they, like Loopworks, does not expect anyone to be in the cab with you unless you okayed it. It's kind of like if you know, go to using your own car. Yes, you can bring your dog. Yes, you can bring your daughter. Yes, you can bring, you know, friends, two or three of them. But that's it. There's only the people that you know are in that vehicle with you. Sal, the other thing that you mentioned was that you're under the impression that Glideways is talking about a door-to-door service, whereas what, you know, LoopWorks is talking about is a podcar stop to podcar stop. Now, Glideways actually probably could eventually do that door-to-door technology because they have these independently operating cabs that can leave the guideway and run around on streets. And that's what they call a dual-mode system, and Ultra chose that design, and there's one or two other out players out there that have chosen that design. There's upsides and downsides. But if you're thinking about podcar stop to podcar stop, that's generally how, you know, people see PRT in the world.
I don't know how to respond to the last comment you just made, but my comment is, then we're still talking about how a critical design is for us to do any type of analysis in terms of cost or, you know, whether it's going to function in our community. Mm-hmm. So we can't just do a general, you know, conversation about podcars without specifically looking at what's going to work in our community. Additionally, in the very beginning, there was a definition of what Santa Cruzans want, and it left out a lot. I thought that you were kind of trying to catch everything by saying better transportation, right? So you said that Santa Cruzans want transportation, we want better. And that's true, but what does better mean, right? So when you're talking about our bus systems tend to be late 40% of the time. So what Santa Cruzans want is dependable, so on time, rapid transportation that's ecological, accessible, and affordable. So when we start looking at all of those different factors, then we're talking about accessibility. So how is it going to work for seniors and disabled, right? One of the podcar questions I have is, what about people like me? What about people in wheelchairs? So on the buses, our wheelchairs get tied down to keep us safe, so we're not moving around in the buses, right? However, and then Hannah, you were talking about the vans, right? So I routinely take a van for medical expertise appointments to the other side of the hill. Notice nobody's talking about 17, right? We're just talking about one right now. We all know that we need public transportation over 17. We have no public transportation other than the buses over 17, which costs about $14 a ride, and it takes 2 hours, one way. Okay,
so it sounds like, and what you're concerned with here is that there's a discussion about podcars, but the bigger question of transportation isn't completely answered by this podcar question, and there's other needs that many of the community have.
Right.
Yeah.
We definitely have a need to have transportation on the other side of the hill that's affordable, dependable for our seniors to get specialty cares and our disabled people to get specialty medical care, because most of it's over the hill. Mm-hmm. So when we're talking about this type of transportation, we're just completely not dealing with that issue. The podcar technology, everyone needs to know as well, has not been developed. The transportation hasn't been tested to be able to cover the distance that we're talking about from Watsonville to Santa Cruz. That's the primary transportation that we're talking about with Highway 1, right? And so for that, you know, we're looking at ecology issues, but also we have the dependability in terms of time. But I think you want me to stop talking at this point. Is that the issue here?
What it is, yeah, there's a bit of a line forming back there.
Okay.
But what you've shared, I think, is super important. And I think that we'll get the chance to come back and have Rob and some of the other panelists comment on these points. And it would be great to hear from one or two people back here as well, and okay, maybe kind of bring everything together.
I just wanted to say one more thing. You struck out the air taxis, air taxis are already being used in Africa and China. So that is the, that's the Jetson type transportation. The reason that we're not really talking about it here is that we don't have access to the air traffic control that you would need to have that type of transportation here.
Well, actually, the reason we X'd it out was the bandwidth. It really, it can move people into tight, congested locations, and that's why I mentioned Manhattan. But as a regular way of moving people around, you're not going to be moving a lot of people using air taxis, is my bottom line at this point. And that's why it's really not on the list of high priority options.
Okay, so kind of it's not off the list per se, and it may have its place and its time and everything, but you're kind of looking at a different context.
It's a capacity problem.
One other thing, have a seat. One other thing that Stephanie mentioned.
Okay, all set. I'll take a chair.
Stephanie mentioned or asked about, well, how about somebody like her in a wheelchair that's powered and is heavy? And I spoke with somebody that was in even worse physical condition and had a bigger and heavier setup, and he said it weighed about 400 pounds. And he was very lightweight. But I went back and I checked. With our technology, apparently you can have up to an 800 or 850-pound payload. So even an individual in a very heavy wheelchair would be able to go up the elevator at the pods car stop, roll into the vehicle, and be taken to the destination stop.
Okay, thank you. Sir.
Hi, my name is Jaime Rendilla. I'm the general chairperson for SMART. I represent the Santa Cruz Metro bus drivers and Paracruz drivers. Where to begin? There's a lot of controversy going on with this conversation. I can tell you for a fact that Metro has improved the system drastically. We've improved the buses. We've improved in cleaner air. We drive 40-foot buses. Those 40-foot buses carry roughly 50, 60 people. There was a comment, sir, that sometimes those buses have 15 people at a time. I invite you to ride the Route 1, the Route 2 in the morning. I particularly invite you to ride the UCSC routes. Those things are jam-packed. Now, what I mean by jam-packed is on a daily basis, we drive around thousands of students up there and back and forth. They go all over the place.
So would you say that there's like a combination of high traffic routes and then, say, maybe less volume but important accessibility routes?
And that would be the same thing with this kind of system if it ever came online. Uh-huh. Now, needless to say, yes, Santa Cruz Metro buses are, we have a variety of people on those buses, good, bad, clean, not so clean, so much. Everybody remembers COVID, right? During COVID, Metro took precautions, drastic measures to keep those buses clean and equipped on a constant minute-by-minute basis. It wasn't just on a one-day basis, they were clean. Yes, there's a lot of bacteria, there's a lot of diseases. Tell me when you're walking downtown, you don't find somebody with a disease, with a cold, with the flu, and you just rub yourself around them. This happens everywhere. The buses are efficient, buses are effective. We've gone from a 30-minute route on a regular down to a minute route service, a 15-minute route service, which is increasing the service. Our ridership has improved, and trust me, right now it's going to improve even more with the gas prices we're having. So, yes, they are expensive, but they are efficient. Mm-hmm. We go to San Jose, we take people back and forth from Watsonville all the way to San Jose. Now, I'm not judging the system here, but how is the system going to work up at UCSC? When we're driving 60, 70 passengers in one bus, and I don't know if I mentioned this, we've acquired articulated buses, double-sized buses, just to meet the standards and meet the efficiency that we require to meet. How is this system going to work for that?
Okay, so that's what's the my sense is that it's not a sort of a competitive system, but it's a complementary system, but it's a question, how do they complement? How do they fit together? Are you able to tackle that?
Well, I absolutely agree with you. And there was a study done, geez, it must have been over 10 years ago, in Palo Alto. They've got a research park there, and they said, well, if we had a PRT system that went from the Caltrain station and served this industrial park area, would you continue driving your car alone, or would you shift modes and do something different? And what we ultimately discovered from that study was that drive alone rate, the solo occupancy vehicle rate, would drop from about 90% down to about 45% when just that one PRT system was included in the mix, because then people could take a carpool to where they could get onto the PRT system, and that would deliver them to the last couple of miles into their actual, where they're going to be working. But when you say that, yes, and I agree with both Lonnie and you, that large vehicles with lots of people in them, you can move more people if each vehicle is relatively close to the preceding one, meaning that a 15-minute headway, and I don't know what the headway is up to UCSC is, but if it's 15 minutes and you're saying, okay, every 15 minutes we're going to be moving 50 or 60 people in a bus, how does that work out per minute? Because I think that if you run the numbers and say, okay, well, if I can put a person in a pod car and send him off on a line that can handle a pod car every 2 seconds, then you're talking about roughly 2,000 people per hour. If you're saying this 1 second apart, now you're doubling that number. So the size of the vehicle is only one of the two factors. The other is, okay, how fast, how far is it between, how long is it between vehicles? And with the pod car stuff, it can be like 1 second apart as they're going up the hill. Also, at the pod car stop where you're actually getting on, how long does that take to do? And that's really about 15 seconds per pod car using this particular technology.
Question. So the 1 second, 2 second pod car, is that a theory or is that proven?
Well, that's proven on my freeways every day, and that I'm driving behind people, and I swear, you know, if I put 2 seconds between me and the next guy, somebody's going to cut in there and take that gap from me. So technically, I mean, even though you were supposed to be having 2 second gaps, we oftentimes have 1 second gaps. And that's with human drivers. With computer drivers, you can tighten that down even further.
Okay, the 1 second, 2 second gaps, I believe that's considered safety.
Absolutely. That's so that you've got enough time to brake if the guy in front of you suddenly decides to stomp on his brakes.
Okay. And I see your point about 1 second, one person, 2,000 people within so many seconds. What happens when that pod breaks down or has a malfunction?
Good question.
I can tell you what happens. What if the answer was, when the bus breaks down, we immediately call for another one and we move those 60 people drastically quick.
Gotcha. Right. So there's redundancy built in this particular system. I can talk about this one particular system that was designed by engineers in Minneapolis or Minnesota 50 years ago or 40 years ago. Anyway, they have a lot of redundancy built in. So, for example, there's two different lines providing power to drive the electromotive force to get you moving down the road. There's no collisions happening because you're not intermixing with people and dogs and cars and buses and everything else that's on the road at grade level. The bottom line is that they've run the numbers and it sounds like they're going to have a failure once every million years or something to that effect. I know this
so,
is like
so
wild
would you say
craziness.
that these are mechanically relatively simple?
This particular design things. Absolutely is. But then we can go back and take a look at one that's been operating on 50-year-old technology for the last 50 years. That's the one in Morgantown, West Virginia. And again, they don't have a lot of failures because the system is simple and it's maintained. And that's, of course, you know, a big piece of the picture. But having a simple design is another big picture. And the redundancy is the thing that really makes it last a long time so that actual breakdowns are so freaking rare.
Okay.
Well, so, to conclude, because we got plenty of people here, to conclude, the theory sounds great, but we have proven facts that the buses are efficient in this way. So I'll leave it at that. Okay. And so is Paracruz as well. And our disabled guest here can attest to that. She has. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Please.
Hello, everyone. James Sendeville here, former bus operator for over 10 years, one of the representatives of Smart TD at an international level, and we got a local here, Santa Cruz Metro, that I currently help out and assist Jaime in representing our members. So a couple of things. I know there was a mention of making this a for-profit instead of, you know, public sector, and I have a lot of concerns with that, because as we all know, for-profit is for-profit, and a lot of things could be neglected or overlooked because there's not as much regulation or transparency about it. I know this because I come from public sector. We have a lot of transparency and regulation oversight for our buses, so we know we always make sure that they're safe. There's another thing that I want to mention is that I'm really disappointed that I didn't see fully autonomous vehicles stricken out from that sheet, because if you have kept up with the Waymos and all the other autonomous vehicles in other cities, they're creating mayhem that are not getting the spotlight they deserve as far as running over people and not even recognizing that they have a person underneath the vehicle, dragging them for 20 feet, or not recognizing stop signs on school buses, not pulling up on active shootings because they don't realize that that's going on. You know, it's just, that is not something we'll ever support, and it's going back to the human element that was kind of brought up, the connection that mass transportation brings. When we say Metro family, we really mean that, from the people that work there to the passengers we serve. And you only get that with mass transportation. When you got these autonomous vehicles or these pods, you don't get that connection. And we need to get back to a place where we want to connect, because that's ultimately how we grow as a community. And just a question that remained in my head about, I know that you said that it might not ever really break down on us, but what about, and I'm talking as a bus driver, and it's happened with me and my members, medical emergencies or something that happens. These things are going to be up in the air where somebody's having a heart attack or some issue is going on, and there's not going to be any way to get to them in the time needed. And on the plus side, just to add another one to it, with our wheelchair passengers, we as operators make sure that they're safely secured before even moving that vehicle. And if these pods are going to be just letting people wheel their wheelchairs in there, who's going to make sure that they're strapped and safe? So those are two of the more outstanding questions that I have out of the many questions, but I know we don't have time on that. So.
Okay. Well, it's really important additional angles that when you, I mean, it's the there's the basic idea of the pod cars, but then there's a lot of more specific angles that matter to you and each person here. And so, yeah, there's definitely some weeds to get into. If I can maybe kind of open it up here, Lonnie?
Yeah, thank you. And thank you, James. I think your perspectives are shared. I want to get people to visualize just for a minute. Has anyone been to the Netherlands here?
I've seen pictures.
Or seen pictures or video of the Netherlands, where about 25 to 28% of the population rides a bike. So the streets are full of bikes, and they're packed, and there's a lot of bicycles, and it integrates with the rails and the buses. But I want you to imagine for a minute, with a PRT system, if it's in the air, and you're moving as many people as we have need to move on Highway 1 and throughout the community, the air is going to be packed with people. And if it's on the ground, that's direct competition with the traffic, which is already there. So what I'm asking you to do is to envision, do you want both a packed traffic railway on the above in the air, if that's the way this particular system, PRT. I think there's a place and a time for PRT. I think a campus is a great place for it because it's kind of contained. But you put it in a community, you're talking about a whole nother system packed with people and the ground system packed with people or competition. And that's physics.
Thank you. One thing I wanted to mention was, I think you mentioned, Rob, 16 feet. So that might be like that second row of, I don't know, sound absorbing blocks up there. Perhaps if you were to lay the track
at the top of it, yeah.
On top of that. Those blocks there, that would be like the elevation of right. The system, just for reference.
And Lonnie, when you're talking about packed guideway, Well, assuming that there's enough demand to actually pack it. Remember, one way of thinking about it is to say, okay, a lane of highway traffic, freeway lane, take the cars that are in that freeway lane and you can move them up there and be very safe because we've got 2 seconds between cars, right? I'm simply saying that you can pack that even more so you can move more people if you really need to. But it's all up there out of the way. And it only becomes packed basically when there's enough demand for it. And if that demand exceeds the supply, then you get back to talking about, okay, well, maybe we should put in another line that's going roughly the same direction to take some of the load off the first line. That becomes an investment. We're talking about this particular investment because the investment in putting in another highway lane on Highway 1 is expensive, not only in dollars, but also in time and in environmental destruction of what's going on there. Mm-hmm. So if you need to mitigate the traffic on Highway 1, putting it up and putting some additional transportation up in the air makes a lot of sense from that perspective, because you're not having as much environmental impact, you're not costing as much, and particularly if we had a system that paid for itself.
If I could, so we have a situation here. James has a comment, Lonnie has a comment, gentleman in the orange stripes has a comment, and I'm wondering, okay, and one more comment behind Stephanie there.
And I could get off now, I just have one last thing. I mean, sure you'll get to it.
Maybe a quick comment, and then if you want to hand it off to the gentleman here.
So it goes back to that medical emergency, right? You're going to have to stop the pod line, and you're talking about potentially thousands of people all along this line that you're going to have to stop, and now people are stuck up in the air for how long, or how do you get them past the people that you need to stop the pod car, or however that works.
So there's a built-in assumption there that we're going to have to stop the pod car. So when the person got into the cab, they told it where they wanted to go, and it started heading that way. Then they had a heart attack. Unless they interact with the system to get a hold of the operators in the control room, and we're going to have something like that already installed. It's already in the Morgantown, West Virginia system, that the control operators can communicate with people in the pod cars. So unless somebody interrupts their trip by saying, hey, I'm dying here, get me out of here, they will be taken to their destination stop without stopping. So they're not going to be stopping folks on the line. They'll be going to a stop, and if they interact with the operators, that next stop may not be the fourth one down the route where they originally wanted to go. They may get rerouted immediately to the hospital pod car stop, or to the police station pod car stop, or just to the very next pod car stop so they can get off and get some assistance.
So I'm going to guess that that's not going to be an operator. That's going to be your Apple Watch or whatever it is that knows all your health condition and is going to dictate all that for you to right. But anyways, that's another question.
Well, thank you.
All right, thank you, James.
But I don't like the words may. I like will.
Will.
And we can in public transit and our buses right now. Something happens, we will stop and take care of you.
So, okay. Thank you.
Yeah, there are a lot of advantages with having a manned vehicle there.
Yeah. And that's, I think, a good point, is that the question is of how do these systems complement each other? Yeah. Sir.
Hi, I'm Brett with Santa Cruz PRT, and I know we're short on time, so I'll just respond very quickly to medical emergencies, because that was the most recent thing that was brought up. My vision is that the pod car would have a panic button, and when you push that button, assuming you're capable of, you know, assuming you can push the button, it would have a button to go to the emergency at Dominican Hospital or Community Hospital in Watsonville. There should be pod car stations at those emergency rooms, and the system should be able to take someone there immediately in an emergency, faster than an ambulance would be able to, probably, because the system's already in motion and capable of doing that.
So tell me, Brett, if, you know, the former scenario, somebody's on a pod car, and they have a heart attack, and now they want to go to the hospital. One way that I had conceived of it is they communicate with the control center, and the control center redirects that pod car to the local hospital. But
that could work, yeah.
We could also program the system to say, look, if you want to change your destination en route, you can do that. And that's a programming problem more than a technical problem.
Yeah, I'd like another button that says, take me to the nearest bathroom. I got to go. You know, that happens, right?
And the older
so,
we get.
Yeah, so I want to be short and just
sure.
Say it looks like there's a lot of comments that have not been responded to, and maybe we should have maybe a monthly Zoom call or something. I don't think we can do an event like this every month, we could do a monthly Zoom.
This is a starting point, not the end point. Yeah. So do want to say we do have on our schedule 3 more minutes. Thank you all for your patience. We started 2 minutes late, so maybe we can borrow 2 minutes from the past. And
Hi, my name is Monica.
I think you sounded good. Yeah.
Okay.
Close to your mouth.
Hi, my name is Monica Sandoval. My husband is actually a bus operator for Santa Cruz Metro. I love riding the bus. I take it all the time with my kids to the boardwalk, and I support all the bus drivers. A lot of them are my friends and my family. Some of them are here. And personally, I cannot support anything that might take away their jobs. Mm-hmm. I love Unionized California, and I can't. I would like to know how many local positions will your company have?
So, first off, my company is not exactly what you would normally think of as a for-profit company. So we kind of lie in between the public sector transit operators and the private sector. Let's make as much money as we can off of this technology. We're a nonprofit mutual benefit corporation, kind of like a savings and loan is. So what we would be doing is providing services that are not optimized for making a profit, but are optimized for serving the community. To address the issue of what's going to happen with bus drivers, and that's different from how many people are going to be employed by this PRT system. Depends on how big the PRT system is. You know, if we start with just a small demonstration and decide that that's all we want to do, then we're only going to be having a few people employed. But the real key to this system is that it complements other technologies. There has been a dozen different studies in a dozen different cities that says, okay, what happens to public transit when we add in PRT technology? And they all came up with these dramatic increases in transit ridership. So I am anticipating, and again, this is like we're going off of studies rather than actual experience. We need to get something built so that we have some real numbers to work with. But if it turns out, like this study that was done 10 years ago that I mentioned in Palo Alto, we're going to see a lot more ridership on public transit. And we're talking not the 5 to 10% that VTA has been trying to achieve for a decade or two. We're talking 100%, 200% more ridership. And if that happens, we're going to need more bus drivers, because we're going to be taking those headways from 30 minutes to 15 minutes down to 10 minutes, which is the real number that we want to get to. Because when we get to that 10-minute headway between buses, that's when people are saying, okay, this is a system that I can rely on getting from point A to point B in a timely fashion. And that's my hope, is that we can get a synergy going on that is just remarkable. And serves everybody in the community, including the bus drivers.
Specifically, what type of positions will you be opening up to serve the company?
So this kind of job creation.
Do you have a title? Do you have any titles, wages? Is there anything like that you could give us information?
Well, again, I can only talk about what we're doing, and we're planning on giving, you know, doing wages that are commensurate with, you know, union wages. We're not looking to shortcut anything on this, because we're working for the community. We want a service that serves our community, and that means that the people that are employed there get paid a living wage, whatever that might be. And if we can't afford it, then we're going to have to raise money somehow. Right now, we're looking at the possibility of not charging people in our demonstration zone, only when they go out of that zone, into, if we expand it, when they go in and out of that zone, then we're going to be charging them a fair fare, which is going to be probably around the same cost as a bus fare. So we're trying to keep that down, but if it means that we cannot pay our people a living wage, we're going to be looking for ways to get enough revenue to actually accomplish that.
I just want to mention Waymo, right? Those autonomous vehicles, they're actually hiring people from the Philippines. So that's why I'm asking the question, because I want to make sure that the jobs that are created will stay local if it will be replacing some of those bus operators.
Well, this is why Metro should be looking at working with this system so that they can set up the rules. If you go the route that we're talking about in Milpitas and have a nonprofit mutual benefit corporation, again, as a community corporation, basically, it's owned and operated by the community, that's where you have the opportunity to say, okay, this is how we want it to operate. And so it's not like a private enterprise where they get to make all the decisions. You really want to maintain control locally. And that is, again, a political decision. That's not an economic or engineering decision. That's a political decision, as is the fares that are charged currently for bus fares.
How much will the fares be for your company?
It'll be whatever it costs to cover our O&M expenses. If we have to borrow money, it'll have to pay that back also. But mainly, we're going to keep it as low as we can get away with, like I mentioned. In the system that we're envisioning in Milpitas, we've got the small demonstration project. It's about 4 miles worth of podcar great guideway. And we expect that we may be able to get enough revenues. We've got 23 different revenue streams, potential revenue streams identified. And if we can get those to actually pay for our operations and maintenance, then we can continue to provide free transit to people.
So can I, my apologies for interrupting here. If I can summarize what I think I hear here, the guinea pigs are Milpitas, and the people from Santa Cruz can go see how it looks and how it works. And that the coming up with not only the technical question of how the podcar system works, but how it relates with the other systems already in place, and whether that is something that generates a greater culture of public transit or if it becomes a competitive thing, and you're trying to emphasize that it's a complementary system, but the community is not entirely convinced, so that's a sort of a homework assignment for you.
Okay.
And so with that, I would we're a couple minutes over, but I did want to just to bring it back and give each panelist the chance to have a brief comment. And thank you very much.
Monica,
thank you. Super important. So yes, Lonnie.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity to be here. I think these kinds of discussions really help us drill in, and there is a lot of information yet to be learned. I was thinking, if you wanted to pilot a project, maybe consider piloting the project to the rural areas which are not accessed currently by any other form of public transit. And that might give us an opportunity to experience it and not be in competition with our local public transit. And I'm thinking up into the mountains.
And I think that's an ideal place for these robo-taxis.
I'm not a fan for all the reasons mentioned earlier, because of displacement of jobs and safety and things that I think are not yet tested. I think there is a little potential, but I won't get into that. So
that's
anyway.
Big question, I think, maybe for round two.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, to me, again, it's really a busy community. I think about areas like when I lived in Europe where you have rail and buses working in tandem together and really seamlessly, is that you have areas that are quiet and not so busy. I see these multi-level processes, like the community is going to be so busy, it's going to be hard to really enjoy just being in that space.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Any of the other panelists, something that you'd like to comment?
I would just
with
add
the microphone, please.
Oh, sorry. I would only add that I think the disabled community needs more convincing that this would meet our needs.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you.
And I think that's critical. You know, again, from where I'm from, having people around feel safe for me versus me being by myself, to be honest with you, right? I don't do Ubers and all that kind of stuff unless I'm with a group of people. But I think at the end of the day, there's still more that needs to be revealed, for lack of a better word. So I think it'd be important that if, you know, as the gentleman was saying, maybe do a Zoom call once a month to start educating the community on this, but also at the same time continue to support the mass transit that is getting people from point A to B, point B in this community.
Thank you. Matt, anything you'd like to finish with?
I would just say that so far what I know and understand about personal rapid transit, I have a hard time seeing it being able to complement or perform in a way that would increase the capacity of our current transportation system. And I look forward to more information about it.
All righty, thank you. Could we have the last slide in the deck up on the screen there? We'll jump over a couple, but that last one I think is the key. All right, Rob, would you like to finish off with a brief last word?
Well, we do have this.
Sorry, it's a last slide called Moving Forward.
Now, these are just background information, these slides here.
There we go.
And this is, if you need some additional information or you want to contact us, these are the ways to do it. And if I'm going to leave it at that unless somebody's got something else they want to say.
Super. I hope this has been an informative. I mean, I have none of my opinion matters here, but what does matter is that there has been some value to the audience here learning a little bit about this new idea, and I suppose value to Rob in understanding what the concerns of the community is, so that you can better understand how to, you know, what to communicate and how to communicate it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully that's the case.
Thank you both.
All right, thank you very much.
Got it. Yeah.